Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey,
there it is.
Drums, baby.
You guys can't see it, but this every single week, Casey plays this live. This isn't a recording. Just a heads up. Like, what you can't see is it's not even a drum machine. It's a full-on drum set, and Esther is in the background playing the, what is this, the saxophone? So it's Esther and Casey playing this live every single week. So someday he'll show you. You should definitely ask him to play next time you see him in person. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. This is, of course, the A-Side Live Chat on MMAFighting.com. It is Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on this lovely 101-degree day in Phoenix, Arizona. Joining us this week, we had a busy week last week. No Between the Links last week because this man was in Tampa covering bare-knuckle fighting. So we decided to get him back on this week so we could recap what he saw, maybe talk some MMA. Maybe you just need some more Mike Heck in your life. So, Mike Heck, how's life after a not tumultuous, I don't know why I started it with that word, that week in Tampa?
It was a great week. I needed a couple days to recover. It'd be my first time on an airplane in a couple of years, but I enjoyed it. It was a great week, and it's 74 degrees here in Boston-ish Massachusetts. It's a beautiful day. Beautiful July day.
I'll trade you. But yes, Mike was obviously not on the preview show, the post show, the pre-fight Q&A, and we got all kinds of questions. Where is Mike Heck? And I'm just like, well, he's covering fighting, so you can go watch all of his content later on. It was just Casey and I in the pre-fight Q&A, and then, of course, AK had to come in and ruin the vibe on the post show. But Casey, how's life in Englewood?
Esther, no more saxophone. We're good, Esther. She loves that saxophone. Oh, sorry, we're live. What's going on?
Yeah, people are always like, why isn't Esther taking photos anymore? I'm like, well, she's obviously a professional jazz saxophonist.
Yeah, she's playing royalty-free music now. You can, Things are good.
Things are great, but you guys know the drill. You can ask us any questions. Obviously, Motu, it's going to be fist-fighting related, but you can ask us whatever you want. If Casey sees it, he'll pull it up in the YouTube comments. I saw a few in the Twitter comments already. I haven't looked at a single one on the site because I like to go in blind. So, without further ado, Casey, what is our first question?
To the questions. All right, here we go. Hey, let's get to the big one.
Judging criteria from Tristan Gourget, 1982 on the site. Do you guys think your colleague, Damon Martin, brought up a good point in his interview with Corey Sandhagen regarding the scoring criterion judging? He felt that Dillashaw didn't meet the criteria to actually win the fight against Sandhagen. Damon went as far as to say that he did feel it was a robbery according to what the actual scoring criteria says. I know Mike talked to Dean Thomas, and this is about this on What the Heck with judging overall. So what do you think judges should actually focus on when it comes to that aspect of it? I think it might be something that should be talked about more. So, well, I'm sure we'll talk about the TJ Dillashaw victory over Corey Sandhagen a lot this week, but this question's specifically about judging because there were, of course, Mike, I don't know if you were in the air or you watched or what, but it was a controversial night, to say the least, at UFC Vegas 32. The TJ Dillashaw Corey Sandhagen fight in question here is not even, quote unquote, the biggest robbery of the night. I wouldn't consider that one a robbery. I just thought that was a close fight. There were more egregious decisions on that card. So first, did you get to watch all the fights on Saturday night?
I didn't watch them Saturday. I've been watching them sparingly over the last couple of days. I didn't think this one was a robbery. I agree with Dean Thomas. I thought he made a really good point that Corey, he felt that Corey Sandhagen was the better fighter overall. Like he can leave Vegas feeling that he's the better man, but he felt that TJ Dillashaw won the game. Like he was opportunistic. Like when he needed to take the fight to the ground to steal rounds, he did. When he needed to take Sandhagen's back and get some control there, he did. But in Dean's eyes, he felt that Sandhagen overall, top to bottom, A to Z, was the better fighter. But Dillashaw just played the game, used his veteran savvy, and got the win. So I didn't think it was a robbery. I thought it was a tremendous fight. It was super close. It's what this bantamweight division is all about, which it's just awesome. And these are two of the very best in that division and in the sport right now. So tremendous fight. No robbery. I scored it for Sandhagen, like a lot of other people did, but I wasn't bent out of shape about the decision, that's for sure.
No, and there were a lot of other people that said, I can't remember who's, these are fellow fighters that I saw periodically over Twitter, especially on, we have a lot of content on Damon's interview with Corey Sandhagen out right now. So since I run our Instagram page, I see a lot of the fighters commenting on it. So a lot of fighters are in the days prior. Now that the dust has settled, I don't think they agree that Corey Sandhagen won, but they agree that they can see why TJ got the nod. Similar to what Corey Sandhagen said, where Corey Sandhagen was doing a lot of exciting stuff, but he wasn't, you know, like there were close fights in there. And even Corey Sandhagen said that minor mistakes led to TJ's victory. And he can see how the judges say that. And I think a lot of fighters are in agreement. I can't remember who said it, but it was all the spinning shit that Corey Sandhagen was throwing that maybe cost him the fight. But Casey, what is your assessment on judging criteria? What should they be focusing on?
Damage, and then probably damage.
There you go.
And awesome. I think it was a robbery, and I think Sandhagen clearly won the fight. And arguably, he should have got round one, too, now knowing that TJ actually got his knee blown out in that fight in the first round. I thought it was a clear robbery. It was a worse robbery than the Maverick fight. Because of damage.
Okay.
Can we just? Yeah. We're going to have these arguments forever about judging the way the current scoring structure is. Everybody being on different pages, like this. Five years from now, when we're older men on the A Side Live Chat Senior Edition, we're going to be having the same discussion. It's ridiculous that the 10-point must system is horrendous as it is. But there's so many holes.
That doesn't help.
Yeah, I mean, Casey, you and I have talked about this during these pay-per-view, like post-fight press conference shows. The difference between 10-9 rounds, especially in the co-main event, it's insane. Like, how can you give Kyler Phillips a 10-9 and then give Holyam Paiva 10-9s in rounds 2 and 3? It makes absolutely no sense. And until that part of the game is fixed, we're going to be having these conversations forever. It sucks.
That single round, that round one for Kyler Phillips was probably the most egregious round score of the entire event. But I thought there were three very bad decisions on that card. And I think we all know what all three of them were. And I thought Sandhagen got screwed. I thought Sandhagen's the better fighter. I thought Dillashaw looked great, but just not as good as Corey Sandhagen. And in a weird way, in a weird kind of crazy bit of irony, the fact that Dillashaw got his, I mean, Sandhagen almost basically won the fight the first round. He blew his knee. He popped Dillashaw's one of his LCL, I think. So now Dillashaw's going to be out for a good while. Because of that, Dillashaw had to kind of go for these takedowns and where he couldn't actually finish the takedown. So he was just kind of holding on to that back, that little that waist lock he had. And DC kept saying, that's a takedown. And at least Dom was there to go, what are you talking about, DC? If you listen to the commentary. But because of Dillashaw's messed up knee, I feel like Dillashaw actually had to play for points and just kind of wall and stall. And unfortunately, the judges rewarded that. So that's how the cookie crumbles. Don't like it, but
here. What if it's like a Willie Pep round where there is no damage? But then, how do you score it? Willie Pep won a round without throwing a single punch.
Well, if no damage is taken, then you go. Effective grappling. Was that what did they call it?
In this fight, if it is all one fighter throwing just 100 punches, doesn't land a single one, no grappling. Is it output or is it defense? I don't particularly care one way or the other. I'm just trying to, like, if you take damage, because there have clearly been rounds where there's no damage done. How would you score that fight? I have never seen a Willie Pep round in MMA ever, but it happens in boxing.
I go with the effective grappling. Aggression means nothing. Aggression means you're just...
But I said there's no... This is a purely striking round. There has been no clinching, no grappling. This is just a guy throwing all kinds of spin and shit, punches, kicks, everything. They never clinch up. They never grapple. They never wrestle.
Give it 10-10.
This is all hypothetical scenario. So you're giving it a 10-10?
Yeah. I know those are some reason unicorns for some reason, but... I think I if 10-10s exist, use them.
Okay.
That's my thinking.
Anything Thank else? You for the question, Tristan. For a question from Terrence Leverett, do you think Stipe is getting unfair treatment by the UFC? He said he didn't want to fight this year, last I heard. He also expects to get a rematch right away because of his title win record. Well, I think this is great what he did at heavyweight. If he always gets a loss to his next challenger, if he wins the belt back, he can go win, loss, and expect a rematch. I think one is a better fit. Thoughts? And then that's the first question. It's a little worded a little weird. So I think he's just saying, is it unfair that Stipe is not getting the immediate rematch, considering he holds all the UFC heavyweight records? DC got back-to-back rematches, he got the immediate rematch with DC. DC, of course, fought at least one time between them when he fought Derek Lewis at UFC 230 in Madison Square Garden. And then Stipe.
Yeah.
Well, he defended the belt, yes. Yeah. And then Stipe got that next fight. So Stipe fought Daniel Cormier 3 times in a row, and now he's basically asking for the same courtesy against Francis Ngannou. Francis Ngannou said he didn't really see the need for an immediate rematch. Dana White seems perplexed when that scenario was brought up in the pre-fight press conference. I don't know if you guys remember that, but I think it was Schmo brought it up, and Dana was like, that's a good question. And then, like, he just moved on when presented would Stipe get another chance at Francis. So, Mike, is Stipe being treated unfairly by the UFC?
I mean, you can make the argument that Stipe has been being treated unfair by the UFC for years now, even since he was the champion. I mean, the heat and the rivalry between Stipe and the UFC has been going on for years. Like, Jose, you were at UFC 220. You saw what happened when Stipe beat Francis. He wouldn't even let Dana put the belt around his waist. That rivalry has been going on for a long time, and a lot of it has to do with promotional push and stuff like that, and a lot of it's on him, too. He's not the most outgoing individual, most charismatic guy when he does interviews, but that shouldn't take away anything from his fighting. Another thing that we have to keep in mind is that the heavyweight divisional landscape is way different than it was back then. Now you got guys like John Jones. There was no Ciryl Gane coming up and winning these fights. Derek Lewis, you know, had just fought for the title not long before that and was trying to make his way back up, which he has done. And now we have all these other contenders that are trying to make their way up the rankings right now. So the heavyweight divisional landscape back when Stipe lost the belt to DC, it was just so vastly different than it is now. There wasn't that many contenders. There's a lot of different contenders now. There's a queue in the heavyweight division for the first time in a while. So and Dana has said, like, you know, especially with what's going on with John Jones and, you know, the back and forth between them, he said Stipe is going to get the winner of this fight. So, I mean, or once Francis has an undisputed title fight, Stipe's going to get the next shot. So, I mean, it's not like he's not in the conversation at all because Dana keeps bringing him up. Like, the winner of Gane and Lewis will fight Francis, and then Stipe will get the winner of that. So it's not like he's out of the conversation. It's just he's just not next. It's just a different division than it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine if John Jones was moving up to heavyweight when Daniel Cormier was the champion, we probably wouldn't have had the trilogy with Stipe so back to back to back. I'm sure they would have thrown a John Jones fight in there against Daniel Cormier at heavyweight, or a Brock Lesnar fight or whatever, regardless. Or if Cain Velasquez hadn't come and fought Francis Ngannou, maybe we could have gotten Stipe and Cain during that time. But Casey, we're going to keep it to this scenario specifically because I feel like has Stipe been treated unfairly by the UFC has been a question for like the last 4 years. And it's like Mike said, it's there's a lot of scenarios where he's been treated unfairly. But in this specific scenario, not getting the third fight against Francis, is it unfair?
Yes. But it has nothing to do with the belt. It has everything to do with money. That's all. If the pay cut many fighters have to take once they go from being a champion to number one contender is massive. I think it's like maybe like they get 3 or 4 times less. So say Stipe, I'm just going to say Stipe makes $1 million for a championship fight. His next fight, say they book him against Curtis Blaydes, I'm sure he's only going to get around $250,000 or something. So like basically it's just a tough fight, you know, just dangerous fight, and you're making a quarter of the money. So a lot of that's I guarantee you, if Stipe was going to get paid the same amount or near the same amount as a championship fight, he would take it. But I'm sure they just didn't. I'm sure they're offering him, they're lowballing him, and fans aren't going to be like, okay, whatever, we move on. And it sucks for Stipe.
Yeah, because let's not forget this big rivalry with Dana White, the genesis of it was pretty much, I think Overeem got paid more than him when they fought.
Yeah.
And Stipe was the champion. I think that's where it started, correct? Yeah. In Cleveland,
in
no
Cleveland.
Less?
In Cleveland, yeah. And Stipe sold out that place. Not, yeah, whatever, yeah. Obviously, you know, obviously, Stipe's never been happy with the money with the UFC. He's kind of been open about it, kind of not, you know, a little coy, obviously. I mean, not obviously, but, you know, he's been out there kind of hinting at it, but then he kind of pulls back, which is kind of a bummer because you kind of want to, you know, like, just lay it out there, Stipe. You know,
I don't think it's a bummer. It's just how he is.
Yeah.
Just let him do his thing. Like, if he doesn't want to talk about it, he doesn't want to talk about it.
Well, bummer for media people because, like, we want to know. Fans want to know. I want to know. These are the things about the sport that I want to know about. We see the fights. We see the press conferences. These are this is the real part of the sport, the dirty part, the real fighting, you know?
Question 2. I think Paige would be better.
Why isn't Stipe fighting in Houston for the interim belt then?
You should call up Dana and ask him.
I mean, I never even thought of that. Like, why isn't it Lewis versus Stipe for the interim belt?
Well, I mean, from what he said after the Ngannou loss, he's having another baby, or he maybe even had the other another child, so he wanted to spend some time with his family. And then he's also said that he wants to put on some size and some muscle before, you know, get back up to the 250 range before he comes back, and, you know, in hopes to fight Francis. He felt like maybe he was too light, a little too, just not as big and not as strong, and just felt like he was overpowered by Francis. So he wanted to get those things right before he came back. So, you know, he talked about maybe the end of the year, but probably not. So in my eyes, I didn't expect to see him until 2022 anyway. So,
yeah.
So it's all kind of a moot point if he wasn't going to fight till another few months anyway. So,
right. And again, he's in the conversation. Like, he's in the conversation. Anytime Dana talks about this fight and, like, you know, where they're going with the heavyweight division, he always mentions Stipe as getting the winner of Francis versus the winner of Gane versus Lewis. So there you go. I mean, and the time frame, the timeline lines up perfectly for what Stipe wants. If he doesn't want to fight till 2022, you know, chances are they're going to turn Francis around. You know, if Lewis and Gane, whoever wins that fight comes out unscathed or doesn't take a lot of damage and can bounce back quickly. I have a feeling that the UFC will try to book that undisputed title fight before the end of the year. So Stipe could still get his shot right when he's ready to come back.
I was hoping the heavyweight championship would be in Madison Square Garden. I don't think that anymore, especially with the addition of Kamaru and Colby Covington. But end of the year, that December card, why not? But that would be a lot of time between fights for Francis, especially considering he said he was going to be ready in September.
Right.
Number two, I think Paige would be better at going to Bellator. This is the same group of questions from Terrence Leverett. I think Paige would be better going to Bellator or Gamebred. Bellator, Gamebred, BKFC, which is MMA. Is that just Gamebred FC, right? I don't know why.
I think they're supposed to be a comma. Yeah, I think they're supposed Gamebred to be a comma. FC,
yeah.
Gamebred FC. She lifted BKFC, but she didn't get anything from it to build her brand. I think MMA is a better fit. She can use all her tools. Remember, Rachel was winning the first fight until she got caught with an armbar. Thought. So, yes, Paige VanZant came up short in her second fight to Rachel Ostovich. Obviously, the first fight was on the first UFC on ESPN card in Brooklyn. She submitted Rachel Ostovich, and then they rematched at BKFC 19 this past week, which Mike was at. So we'll get his thoughts on just the fight in general, especially without the commentary. So first, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on Paige's performance in that fight, Rachel's performance in that fight, and if you're her team, where do you send her next?
A lot of people have kind of crapped on Paige's performance, and I don't really understand why, because the fight was good. She definitely has made some improvements, but no one really thought that bare knuckle fighting and bare knuckle boxing would be the lane that Rachel Ostovich like was the most comfortable. But you saw seconds into that fight, this might have been like the best place for Rachel Ostovich. I don't think it was a matter of Paige not looking good. I feel like Rachel just looked great. Like she felt so comfortable. She looked so comfortable in there, and she cracked Paige right away and stole all the momentum within the first 10 seconds of the fight. It's hard to come back from that when you just, you know, cracked by surprise like that. I mean, I know it's a fight, but I don't think anybody expected Rachel to come out so aggressively and land such powerful shots and just be that comfortable in there. So I thought it was just a fun scrap. It was just a really entertaining fight, and Rachel looked great. I thought, you know, she looked better than, you know, Paige looking not so great, if that makes any sense. So I thought Paige looked fine. I thought Rachel looked better, and Rachel won the fight. In terms of where she goes from here, we got to understand she doesn't need to fight. Like, she makes so much money off of her website and things she does on social media and outside of fighting things that she doesn't need to fight. She fights just because it's just the competitive juices that run through her. And let's not forget, she makes a ton of money with BKFC. BKFC opened up the bank account and just flooded her with money to bring her in. And she gets what she wants. She gets more money. She gets the challenge of and the rush of getting into a bare knuckle fight, this up and coming sport. And she has put a lot of extra eyeballs on it. So I think she comes back. I think she sticks around with BKFC. I think this loss will motivate her even more. You saw the improvements. I think what we need to see is we saw more of an MMA fighter in the fight with Britton Hart. We saw more of someone who just focused on boxing in the second fight with Rachel Ostovich. If Paige can somehow find that sort of middle ground between the two, I think she'll find some success. She definitely shows some improvements. Let's not forget, it's her second fight in BKFC. Rachel just looked ridiculously comfortable in there. I think Paige is going to stick around. I think she gets another fight, but let's throw in there with, you know, a tough fighter who, you know, she'll struggle with at times. She could struggle with at times, but one that she'd be favored to win. So I like Casey's idea. He mentioned Cassie Robb a couple of different times. Mm-hmm. I like that idea. That works out just fine. You want to throw in there with Jenny Savage? That's fine. Paige against anybody is still going to draw eyeballs and draw money. So just get her in there with somebody that she can look good against. And, you know, maybe she wins, maybe she loses, but give her somebody that she's a clear favorite over. And just let's see how she does. Try to build her confidence back up.
Casey, do you want to see another bare knuckle fight against Paige, or would you like to see her go do? Because Gamebred FC is bare knuckle MMA, correct?
Correct. I don't think the money's gonna be. If the money is not the issue, actually, I think Paige would be a great bare knuckle MMA fighter. Basically, it's just UFC 1 with a few more rules, just no gloves and everything. And I think bare knuckle MMA is very advantageous to really good grapplers good tough grapplers, and which I think Paige is. I think she's a better grappler than a striker. But going back to Paige's performance, she's 0-2, but she didn't get blown out both fights. She just lost two competitive fights. That's all. Like I've kind of said before, Milwaukee Bucks, they lost the first two games of the finals, and then they won the dang finals. So she didn't. If she would have gotten knocked out, just got demolished you know, in the first round, both fights, then we have a different conversation. Both were competitive, two competitive five-round fights. And, and she, I think Mike said it well. The first time when she fought, she was kind of an MMA fighter doing bare knuckle, and now she was a boxer doing bare knuckle. You got to find something in between. And that's what Rachel had. Rachel had, like, she wasn't a boxer in there. She looked like someone who, she looked like a lady from Hawaii who's been in a few scraps. That's what it looked like to me. And that kind of, that, you saw Mike kind of, when Rachel was talking after the fight, like, there was a different type of look in Rachel's eye that we don't see pre-fight. It was, you kind of go, oh, okay, now I know why Rachel fights. Because a lot of times you look at Rachel, you see her, you know, her photo shoots and everything. You know, she's obviously, you know, she likes to, she loves to make up, loves to look beautiful, you know. But then when the fight happens, like, oh, she likes a scrap. You could tell. And, like, that's the real Rachel Ostovich. And I don't think Paige was ready for that. I think Paige thought she was fighting the Instagram model. And that's not who showed up. That was Rachel Ostovich, the freaking fighter who wanted to throw bungalows. And Paige just needs to kind of find that right aggression in there. And she did make improvements. And so, long story short, I hope we see Paige back again.
Rachel scraps, man. All of her fights, yeah. even in the UFC when she lost, like, I couldn't find, I was looking for the scorecards for the Paige Rachel fight, and I remember Rachel looking pretty good in the first round, and then she got submitted in the second round, but I can't remember exactly how the fight went. I couldn't find any of, like, you know, sometimes they send the scorecards out, and they'll show who won the first round before the submission. Couldn't find it, but she has 3 knockout losses and 3 submission losses in the UFC, and those are all of her. She's never lost a decision, and both of her wins have been by submission, and she's never scored a TKO in the UFC. So interesting MMA career, but I think Mike said it best, and I think Kay said it best. She just seems like she was built for bare knuckle fighting, you know, just go out there and just scrap.
Yeah. And I would say this, Rachel fought in a way that was very risky, because if you're an experienced bare knuckle fighter, she was throwing big, wide, overhand loopy punches that really you should never throw when you're bare knuckle, because it would just break your hand super bad. But maybe Rachel.
Well, I think Rachel
got,
said
Rachel
it
got
in
fortunate
the,
that she didn't break her hand. The punches she was throwing are very dangerous to throw, because you'll break your hand and then you'll lose the fight later. But she didn't break her hand, so good on her.
Well, Rachel said it. I think it was your question, Mike, at the press conference. Wanted respect right out of the gate. She wanted Paige to respect her power right away. So fair play. She won. What Paige does next is entirely up to her. Like we all say, she does need to fight, but if she wants to keep fighting, so be it. But I would like to see her in Game Bread FC or bare knuckle fighting. She clearly, like, we don't cover, and as MMA fighting, we don't cover every single BKFC event. There's a reason we covered this one, because Paige is a big deal in the world of MMA and combat sports. So whatever she wants to do, I'm sure fans will be interested in.
Cool.
Terrence Leverett, if AJ goes out there and wins this weekend, is the prime example. If AJ goes out there and win this weekend, is it the prime example of letting a start grow in their star power and skills?
Oh, I think it's a typo. Sorry.
If so, who could have used this in any org, male and female? I think this is one thing that boxing does well. So, yes, AJ McKee is fighting Patricio Pitbull at Bellator 263 this weekend at the Forum in Englewood. This is the fight that everyone had been hoping for when they made this Grand Prix. This is a fight that I wouldn't have cared if it happened before the Grand Prix. But the fact that they were put on opposite ends of the tournament and it worked out, and both of them are in the finals. Patricio Pitbull, many consider to be the greatest fighter in the history of Bellator. I think we can all agree. If he's not one, he is obviously in that conversation. AJ McKee is the definition of a homegrown talent. He debuted in Bellator at 0-0, correct? Like, he's never fought for any other promotion outside of maybe amateur fights.
Not as a pro. Yeah.
Yeah. They did the Aaron Pico route. He debuted at 0-0, if I remember correctly, back in 2015.
Wow.
And so he had his, how many, so what is he now? 17-0, 18-0, something like that. So he has the record. He has the record for most consecutive wins in Bellator history, but that's because he's an undefeated pro who has never fought anywhere else. So all of his wins have come in Bellator. Like, we've seen a few fighters like this in the UFC, but not to this success. Like, I believe Matt Riddle debuted in the UFC. I believe Matt Mitrione debuted in the UFC. Obviously, CM Punk debuted in the UFC. James Toney, I guess, technically debuted in the UFC and MMA. Those guys obviously did not have the success of AJ McKee, who started, I obviously don't remember his first fight, but he started all the way at the bottom and worked his way all the way to the top. 17, 18 wins in a row, and now he's fighting for the championship. Mike, do you like this approach that Bellator does, or is this just an anomaly that it worked out for AJ McKee? Like, do you want to see this more in MMA?
I think AJ McKee is kind of the middle ground in all the attempts that they tried to build prospects. Like, they did this with Michael Page, they did it with Aaron Pico, and they learned lessons with both, right? Because Michael Page is winning fights, and eventually it became, well, when are you going to throw him in there with someone you legit? Like, when are you going to throw him in there with like somebody in title contention? And he finally built his way up, got knocked out by Douglas Lima, and that was a fight that Page was actually finding some success until that second round. So, I mean, Page is a legit fighter, and I think they built him up well. On the comeback up, you know, Ross Houston is a good name, and there's some decent, Derek Anderson's a decent name, but I think people were still kind of waiting to see if they could bluster back up, because you can't rebuild him again after that. Like, he's been in combat sports for so long. Aaron Pico is different because, I mean, Zach Freeman, they kind of had a misstep right away because people just didn't realize how good Zach Freeman was. And it was the wrong weight class. And, you know, and then they kept giving him guys with winning records. But the resumes weren't that great. And then you throw him in there with the Corrales and the Adam Borges and stuff like that, and people feel like he was rushed. And, you know, you can make arguments with that. But at the same time, if Pico went out there and just devastated both of those guys, and it's like, oh, Bellator did a great job building this prospect up. So you can't win either way. But I think with McKee, they did it right. Slow burn, just kept building him up, putting him on the right cards to fight in front of his hometown fans. Like, that's what Bellator has that the UFC and some of these bigger organizations do not have. Like, they don't just bring in regional fighters to sell tickets and give them opportunities to compete in front of their home crowds and start to build a name like that. And Bellator's also getting better at, once guys are starting to boil over and that cup's starting to spill out, they put them on big cards. They put them on main cards with big main events that have a lot of eyeballs to help build those other stars. And I feel like they're doing that better with Aaron Pico. They've done that better with AJ McKee. And then by the time they realize, like, AJ's legit, this guy's a stud, like, let's see where he can go. It's sink or swim time. The guy has swam. He's won gold medals in swimming, for God's sake. I mean, the guy is just super legit. And because of the way they build him up, it makes this fight so much more interesting, even though Patricio Pitbull's strength of schedule is definitely stronger and better than AJ McKee's. But Bellator did a great job with AJ, and it makes this fight much more interesting. And the betting lines say that. I think Patricio Pitbull is like a -100 favorite in this fight. Like, it's a straight pick 'em heading into Saturday night. So everything they have done with AJ McKee to set him up for Saturday night has been absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I think it was just a perfect partnership. Also, I do want to rephrase, because I said I wouldn't have cared if this fight, I wouldn't have minded if this fight was even before the Grand Prix. I think the Grand Prix helped it out in terms of building AJ McKee, because you can't argue with the tournament. You can't say, oh, he got fast tracked to this and that. Dude earned his title fight going through a literally, like, you can't say no to the next fight because that moves you on. So I rephrase, I'm glad this is happening, because now there is no argument that AJ McKee deserves the title shot. Anyway, Casey, what were you gonna say?
I'd like to note some of the differences between the rise of Pico versus AJ McKee. When AJ McKee was signed, he's 0-0. His first three fights in Bellator were dark fights. They were post-limbs. They weren't like, maybe you could watch on like Facebook.com at the time. I don't know. But they were all fought in Southern California around here, either Temecula or Irvine or somewhere around here. And they were all after the main event. Like, I honestly don't know if Scott and Bellator, they sign a lot of 0-0 fighters. Not a lot, but a lot of 1-0, 2-0, 0-0 fighters. And they throw them on the early prelims or the post-limbs back in the day. I think AJ is just one of those guys that really panned out, because first five or six fights, it was a while before AJ was a televised fighter. So they brought him up very slowly, even in terms of media awareness. So like MMA fighting probably didn't even report on any of his fights until he was like probably 5-6-0. So it's such a different, it's a way the UFC doesn't have really a way to do that. I mean, maybe you can just keep throwing a guy in contender series over and over, but even then, it's still different. I love this fight. Yeah, obviously they did make it. There were a lot of missteps of Aaron Pico, but that's not on Bellator. There's a lot on Aaron Pico and his management, and that's why Aaron Pico did change training camps. That's why he did change management too. People forget that. So they're not. It's not apples and apples exactly. But
right. Yeah, plus Aaron Pico.
Yeah, sorry.
Plus Aaron Pico, like before he even, I mean, this is 2 years before he had his pro debut. Aaron Pico was already anointed as the greatest prospect that ever stepped foot in an MMA gym. Like, he already had all this ridiculous pressure placed upon him before he even made that walk. Before he
was signed at like 16 or something like that.
It's insane. It's insane. It's nuts. And like, AJ got to kind of like, I mean, AJ obviously has the family name, but he got to sort of, like you said, just develop in those post-slim scenarios, like kept the people there after the main event just to watch him fight and slowly builds him up. I think his fourth fight was the first time he was on a main card because it was that Italy card. So they just put him on there. So, and then he just kept building and building. And then I think what was the fight that really they finally started seeing something? The Dominic Mezzada fight. In April of 2017, like, that was a good step up for him.
A 12-1 fighter. He fought a 12-1 fighter. Yes, 12-1 on the real.
Is that the only head kicked? That's the only head kick.
That was a head kick. Yeah, that was the head kick knockout. And then, you know, Blair Tugman's a decent name. Brian Moore's a decent name.
Justin Lawrence is a very good name. Yeah, actually, for who he was.
And all this took place in a 6-year span. So it's not like it happened really quickly. 17 fights in 6 years. That doesn't happen that often. Plus we had a pandemic to deal with too. Mm-hmm. Pretty insane. What a pace and well done. But again, there are certain times where some of these regional fighters don't pan out. Like look at Mike Kimble. Remember Mike Kimble? Yeah. Guy comes in on the early prelims.
Looks good getting off the bus, as they say.
Yep. Couple of quick
great on the mic, great
finishes.
On the mic, you know.
Yep.
Drop a promo,
and they went all in on him, and you know, Paradigm picked him up, and all the, you know, and they tried to push him, they try to build him up, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes fighters are ready for that, sometimes they aren't, and I know Mike personally; he's a good kid. Mm-hmm. Kids still get the drive and hunger, and if he could do it over again, maybe he would, but you know, sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss. AJ clearly was a hit.
And Mike Kimble, I get that. When I saw him fight the first couple of times, when I interviewed him, I was like, "Woo, this guy's a star." Didn't pan out. I think he changed camps. I think he moved to Florida, right? I think he's at Stanford now. Is that true, or am I making that up? Do we know?
Are you sure? I mean, he's still pretty local in New England. Like, I know he does camps kind of all around. Him and MVP are super close now.
Okay.
So I know they do a bunch of different things together. So he's kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Is he still in Bellator?
Pretty sure.
No.
Oh, they released him. Okay.
Yeah, because I know they did that big sweeping. Like, remember that they released Ricky Bandejas, and I thought I remember Mike Kimble being in that. So they released a few names that I thought had big potential. Like Ricky Bandejas, I guess maybe they just didn't see he's not going to fight for the title anytime soon. But he has that big win over Gallagher that they kept kind of milking for a while by putting him on these like the Dublin cards and everything. So Mike Kimble, I can't even remember his last fight, but he's fantastic on the mic, and him and James Gallagher got in a fight in that lobby that one time. All right. And James Gallagher gets under my skin a lot in terms of how he talks trash. Not that he is talking trash, but I just, some of it is a little weird to me. But he's a fantastic fighter. Don't agree with Mike Kimble's art. Do you remember what he was saying? Mike Kimble said some terrible things to James Gallagher in that trash talk. It was kind of disgusting. Anyway.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
A lot of Mike Kimble talk today.
That's right.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child.
It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Invicta to pay-per-view. Any thoughts on Invicta FC moving to pay-per-view and whether you think it's the right move? I was honestly a little disappointed. I haven't missed an Invicta show in years, but there's no way I'm going to pay extra money to watch a feeder promotion for the UFC, especially when Fight Pass is giving me multiple cards every weekend with similar level. Question from Muff Daddy on the site. Casey, I'm sure you want to talk about Invicta FC moving to pay-per-view. What are your thoughts?
Bad. It sucks. Shouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. No, don't. Stop it. No, that's all. I don't know. People have to remember. Invicta FC is not run by Shannon Knapp. I mean, Shannon Knapp is kind of like the president now, but she doesn't run. She is not mm-hmm. The final decision maker for Invicta FC now. It is Access or Anthem or something like that. Whatever that company is, and they do and. They think pay-per-view is the way to make this business, Invicta, a more profitable business. It's $20. I mean, that's a lot of money for, like this Muff Daddy said. Invicta isn't, for a while, Invicta was like a premier league for lady fighting. But when they signed a Fight Pass and sold, you know, their entire strawweight roster to the UFC, they became a feeder league, and that's what they are. Unfortunately for them, no matter what they want to tell us, they are a feeder league to bigger organizations, and people aren't going to pay $20, especially when there's like 10,000 other things we have to pay for and streaming services. So good luck, Invicta. I'm bummed.
Mike, I'm going to rephrase the question. Should Invicta FC embrace the feeder system ideology, or should they continue to try to stand out on their own?
I think they can do a little of both. Mm-hmm. And I think they've tried to do that for several years. The sale obviously happened. It helped out the company. But I think, you know, Anthem being in the MMA space now, I think this is a scientific move. They're taking a shot and trying to gauge interest. Like, maybe $20 is just kind of like the standard price point. Maybe they'll see how they do, and maybe they'll tone it down. Maybe they'll think we'll never do a pay-per-view again. I think this is going to be more of a learning experience for them. Like, just see how it does, see what the interest is. Will people pony up the extra money to watch this product? And I will say this, there have been very few times in my MMA fandom where an Invicta card, where I left an Invicta card saying, man, that wasn't that good. They're usually very good. And I think they can get some of the hardcore fans involved. And if the hardcore fans get involved and they can talk about how good the pay-per-view was, and, you know, maybe it does something for them. But I think this is more of just a trial run and just see how it does. And I don't think this will be the only pay-per-view they do, but this could be the only pay-per-view they do at $20 a pop in the U.S. I will say that. So I think this is just a wait and see. We'll see how we do and go from there kind of a thing. I don't think it's anything like setting us up for a permanent move at this price point and doing a pay-per-view every month or anything like that. I think this is just right now a one-time thing. See how we do and go from there.
Yeah, I always – our former colleague Pete Carroll always made the analogy that, like, if you look at Cage Warriors, like, they are, in all sense, a feeder system into the UFC. If you win the Cage Warriors Championship, you are going to the UFC. So when there is a championship match or fight, however you want to phrase it, that European scene like shuts down. Like everyone is all in on those fights. Can Invictus FC do that? I don't know. I think that's just kind of a regional thing with Cage Warriors, because like the European scene has less options for high level martial arts, and Cage Warriors kind of seems like, I know Bellator does a lot, but like when, who was it? Ian Garry and Jack Grant fought for which weight class. So I think it was the welterweight title like recently. Everyone I know in Europe was tweeting about that fight. Can Invicta FC do that in America? Not sure. I don't think putting it behind a paywall is the way to go, but I'm curious to see how it works out.
Yeah, and especially unless Invicta is going to really up their production value, or they're going to sign like a Paige VanZant to fight. I don't know. You're basically telling fans, here, pay $20 for the same exact thing. Last week, it was free to me. And it's the same roster. I don't know, the same production value. I don't know what you're getting for $20 that you didn't get for free last week.
I don't know enough about television production. I'm sure you guys know, like Mike, you know, obviously know much more about radio production than me. Casey, you know much more about television production. Is Invicta FC, when you watch it, is it a high quality television production, or are there a lot of things you're just like, what's going on here, guys?
A lot of things. What's going on here, guys?
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, because I feel for the top of their card. I'm not going to talk about the bottom of their cards, because the bottom of the cards are very.
Yeah.
I'm talking, the top of the cards. These are UFC Bellator level fighters. I mean, these are world class fighters at the top of the cards. Unfortunately, and this is a lot of it's just budgetary reasons, the production value doesn't equal the quality of the fights in there. So.
Yeah,
I love the fight church though. Big fan.
I like the venue. Yeah, the venue is great, but you still have to. Great. Yeah,
I like their Phoenix series events. Those one night tournaments. I like those a lot. I think Kayla Harrison fought in last November, right?
Uh huh.
Like she had like a one off fight. Like that was
45.
A big deal.
She came down to 45 too. So
That was a big deal. So I think they can clearly pull off like big moves like that. What Casey said, production value wise, I think they could clean up a bit anyway. But that's not always their fault anyway. Biggest UFC stars, setting aside Conor McGregor, who are the five biggest stars in the UFC going forward? Which of them are currently having issues with the UFC brass?
Wow,
that's a loaded question.
we're just gonna rattle off five outside of Conor. Number one, I mean, I'm not even gonna rank them, these are just all off the top of my head. Probably Jorge Masvidal, probably Nate Diaz, probably Nick Diaz whenever he returns. John Jones is still a star.
Yep.
I'm just going to group the Diaz brothers as one, because they have a very loyal fan base. And then like Francis and Kamaru could obviously be mega stars. Dustin Poirier. Right now, just headlines one of the biggest pay-per-views ever.
You didn't even say Izzy. Wow, Izzy hasn't even made that list yet.
Yeah, Izzy's almost got to see the table. He's got like 10 minutes until he gets set.
I agree. I think he is right there, right at the cusp of being that. Because I think like all these people, like Francis, I think is just like the heavyweight champion of the world, has an entire country behind him, this and that. Like being the heavyweight champion and having like the touch of death is enough to make you a star. Kamaru, I think what we were talking about could be the greatest welterweight ever, like eventually. And then the Diaz brothers and Jorge, they have a fan base that's like they do no wrong. Like, they're similar to like when Conor loses, they're like, oh, if there were two more rounds, he would have won. You know, like not they have the most loyal fans in the world. I think Izzy is getting there. I think he's won big name. Like if he had won if he had beat Jan, I think that would have been, I think he would have been there. I think he needed that, maybe that John Jones fight or I don't know. There's one. He's one big mega fight star away, fight opponent away from being having a seat at that table.
Hey, if he would have had a strong round five, he actually wins that fight. I think two judges had it 2-2 going into the fifth.
Yeah, so 100%.
That's it.
And I'm saying he is a star in his region. Clearly, like they're like I can't remember who said it, but someone asked. Like, I think it was on Reddit, someone posted, like, people that live in Australia and New Zealand, how big of a deal are Robert Whittaker and Israel Adesanya? And they said they see Israel Adesanya on billboards and commercials, and they see Robert Whittaker, but not as much as Izzy. They see Izzy everywhere. Like, I'm like, they'll see Robert Whittaker on, like, sports commercials and stuff, but they'll see Izzy on, like the Puma stuff and the cross-promotional stuff. Ben Simmons is similar because I watched a stream of a basketball game and it was like the Australia feed and Ben Simmons was everywhere. Like same things. Ben, do you know who Ben Simmons is, Casey?
I've heard the name before.
Ben Simmons is, yeah, he is a very good basketball player who gets a lot of hate from basketball fans for various reasons, but he's from Australia and he's a big deal in Australia. In America though, if we're talking worldwide, I think Izzy is like one massive performance away on a massive card from being that generational star. That's just my opinion.
I think unfortunately for Izzy, I think the pandemic and COVID really stunted a lot of his popularity, and that's just how it works.
Let me throw a couple of names at you guys and let me see where you put them. Tony Ferguson.
He's a star.
Popular, but not a star. Very popular, but not a star, because when you're there live, you can't hear him talk how loud the arena gets. But I don't think he's translates to a mega star. You're not going to put him on like billboards and stuff, cross promotional. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Anyway, go on.
Michael Chandler.
On his way.
Rose Namajunas.
If she fought more frequently.
Rose, she had the potential to be. I think, unfortunately, just not unfortunate. It's just who she is. Personality wise, she doesn't have the prize fighter personality to get to that next level. But skill wise, of course, she should be a star. And I think, the way she fights, the way she looks, I think everything's about star. But I think, unfortunately, if Rose had just a little, I don't want to say fake it, but a little more media savvy. If she wanted to be in front of the camera more, then she could be.
I think that's part of her appeal, though.
I agree. I think what set her back is her back-to-back fights against Joanna, where Joanna was being that over the top. Because Casey, do you remember when we had Hurricane Helms on this show, and we asked him like which fighters cut the best promos, and he named a bunch of fighters, but they were all male fighters. And then I said, who cuts the best? Which female fighter cuts the best promo? And we all agreed it was Joanna at the time. So she was being that over the top character, and it was and Rose was the perfect antithesis to it. That rivalry right there, if Rose had just fought again rather than taking like a year and a half off, I think she could have been a star. But remember, she took that huge long gap and then got dropped on her head. It's all timing too. Like you said, if Izzy hadn't been hit by the pandemic, he could be a star. If Izzy had gone out there and wheel kicked Yoel Romero, he would be a star. I think that fight was to set up Izzy to be a megastar, especially because the fight was in the United States. But yeah, I think it's a lot of timing too, and with these performances.
Like, I think Brandon Moreno's on his way, and I think timing was perfect for him. Yeah. That was just a perfect storm of, between the fight of the year and then winning the title. Like, that 6-month stretch was massive for him.
Sounds like he could be the breakthrough fight of the year in 2021, right, Mike?
It's very possible. Very possible.
And it's too bad, too, because pandemic screws things up again, even for Moreno, because imagine they could go to Mexico City, do Moreno. Mm-hmm. They could do Moreno, throw a bunch of cash at Henry Cejudo, Moreno-Cejudo in Mexico City. Boom. I mean, as far as just like that to get one of those guys over and get that kind of big
Henry,
star level.
Henry wouldn't take that fight, even for all that money.
Well, okay. Well, whatever. Just I'm saying. Moreno has the personality, the fighting style to be a giant star, but he needs to fight in Mexico City. He needs to fight in a big arena in Mexico. That's all.
Texas, I think he could do big in Texas because Texas fan base is has obviously Texas has a massive Mexican fan base. But if you put
Texas,
him in like
Texas is Mexico. I'm from Texas. That's we stole it from you Mexico.
You did. You guys won the war.
I know. But back to this question, the biggest stars in UFC, I know it sounds kind of weird to say, but Habib, Ronda, and GSP still.
Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously you can put those on. Like Brock Lesnar, the second Brock Lesnar comes back, he's clearly that's what I mean.
So there's something, I don't know, there's something still weird about that.
I mean, anything in like Kimbo Slice is still a bigger star than like 90% of the UFC roster.
95.
Yeah. 95%. Like Chuck Liddell, if he fights, if he ever fights again, he's already a bigger star than 95% of the UFC. It's just how it is. Like I remember I was talking with someone this past week that worked that like covers a lot of Bellator and works like has like behind the scenes of Bellator stuff, and he was saying that the Kimbo, I can't remember if it was Kimbo Dada or Kimbo Shamrock. I think it was Kimbo Shamrock. To this day, is the highest ratings Bellator has ever done by like astronomical.
Same with
like
Tough.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Same with Tough. Like it is in another hemisphere. Like they can't even count that because it skews the numbers too much.
Yeah.
So like that's how big of a deal Kimbo Slice still is, and he's passed away. They do a memorial service for him every single year on his anniversary. Like the UFC, like a remembrance of Kimbo Slice. Mm-hmm. Bellator does it. Like fighters talk about him still. He made a big deal.
I was at every single Kimbo Slice fight except for his Tough fights, which I wasn't allowed at. But
he was a very
first fight to his very last fight.
He was a very nice man. I interviewed him once, and he was very nice.
I went to a pre-fight house party he had before his unfortunate loss to Seth Petruzzelli. I went to his home, met his family, and all this stuff. It was fun. I met Matt. That was the first time I met Mask from late.
Oh
Mask.
Wow! I never met Mask. That's awesome. R.I.P.
Oh, long question.
Good lord. Nickname fails from Jose Young's Bill Cosby sweater on the site. I can't wait for that. I can't wait for it to get cooler outside so I can bust that bad Larry out. Totally unrelated to anything current. What is up with some of these lame nicknames? Blonde Fighter, The Leech. Take Neil Magny, for example. No nickname for years and now starts calling himself the Haitian Sensation. What the heck is that? We have to do better. Neil, you fight out of Colorado. The same place as Nate the Great Marquardt. How about you stick with the theme and call yourself the Magnificent Neil Magny? Oh, I love that.
That is good.
Lee Jiliang, you have too much swag to call yourself the Lee. That literally sucks. Lee, Uncle L, Jiliang. What's Uncle L mean? And his walkout song could be, oh, I get it, because like LL Cool J. That is amazing. Oh, my God. And his walkout song is LL Cool J's Jingling Baby, which would be the same line, Uncle L, the future of the funk, the Jiliang baby, go ahead, baby. Oh, man, this guy's nailing it.
I know.
Do you feel me? What's the fighter nickname? What's the fighter nickname in your opinion, and which are the best? Sweater out. Well done, Django. This is a fantastic. We've had this question. We had a similar question about nicknames before when we had Andre Feely and Uriah Faber on this show. Andre Fletcher Feely and the California kid Uriah Faber. Mike, I think we can all agree the Magnificent Neil Magny kind of snuck up on us, and that is a 10 out of 10 nickname. I will no longer start call Lee Jiliang the Leech. He is literally Uncle L for the rest of time.
You know, I was down with the Leech until he made his argument. I was like, the Leech is a good name. I was like, oh, you know what? You're right.
See, here's what social media should be, guys. You present an idea. You don't attack anybody. You present an idea, and you back it up with fact-based science that you can't refute.
Science.
Take my Bill Cosby science, baby. So anyway, Mike, twofold question, because we can already agree everything else you presented is 10 out of 10 ideas. Best fighter nickname, worst fighter nickname?
I mean, I think he, I mean, what else can I add to this? Like, this, it was just so good. This is like one of those, this is one of those listener questions that like needs no answer. Like, it's just done. We could just walk away and end the show right now. It's
you know how stated. The co-main of our friends over at the co-main event podcast, Chad and Ben, they're the ones that started Bobby Knuckles.
Yes.
They started that. We're starting it right here.
Much Uncle better L. nickname than Mr. Doctor. Was it the Reaper?
The
Mr.
Reaper.
The Reaper.
Mr. Reaper.
Mr. Reaper would be amazing.
Bobby Knuckles is a great name.
I think the one that sticks out to me, just because you don't call him by his name anymore, is one. I mean, Wonder Boy just sticks out. I mean, he's just Wonder Boy. I think it doesn't get much better than that, because like you don't even call him Stephen Thompson. You call him Wonder Boy. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't call him by his first or last name. And when you do that, that's always the sign of a great nickname. So I'll go with Wonder Boy, just because it's just there, and everybody calls him that. And you know, I like Poirier. I like the Diamond. Nickname? Makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Notorious Conor McGregor is a good
That's
one.
That's a great nickname.
Fantastic.
That is a perfect nickname, to be honest. Perfect nickname, it might be Conor McGregor, to be honest.
Yeah, and I love El Cahuey too. I think that's just like, it works. I don't even know what it means, but
El Cahuey means the boogeyman in Spanish.
Yeah,
El Cahuey is what Mexican mothers tell their kids before they go to bed, so you don't get out of bed, or El Cucuy will pull you under the bed. I have been saying for years that the fact that there is not a Mexican female fighter that doesn't go by La Llorona is a travesty, because anyone that grew up in a Mexican household, that name sends shivers down your spine. Like, I get PTSD, because it's another boogeyman story where this weeping woman comes out of the water and pulls you into the water and drowns you for getting out of bed at night. Like, good God. Like, I want Tatiana Suarez to go by La Llorona, because she drowns you in there so badly. But to each their own.
Some great nicknames. Actually, Ronda Rousey. Rowdy mm-hmm. Ronda Rousey. Perfect nickname.
Sure.
I think Izzy has a great nickname. The last
Stylebender.
Yeah, Stylebender. I think that works perfect for him.
That is very unique. Great television show.
I like the Bullet for Valentina Shevchenko.
Valentina, especially because she has a gun
that
tattoo.
Works just for her.
Oh. Mighty Mouse
is a good one. Nickname.
I think Game Bread's a great nickname it works great for Masvidal.
For him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also has it tattooed on his throat.
Yeah. What's him?
How about the James Krause?
Nope. Don't like that one.
The Assassin, comma baby.
Yeah, see, that's what I want Brandon Moreno to change his name to. I also was a big fan when I was a journalist. I loved the Dean of Mean, because it just rhymed with Keith Jardine.
That worked. That was a good one. Not to be negative, but I have such a giant issue with how bad Caitlin Chikagian's nickname is.
The Blonde Fighter?
It's just like, oh, okay, I get it. But every time I was like, oh, all right. Those are some good
ones. Well done, Mr. Sweater.
A great nickname, the Kick-Ass Machine. The Bellator, Jason Jackson. Yeah. Bellator.
The kick-ass machine.
There you go, up and coming fighters. Kick ass machine is there for the
there,
taking.
Take it.
The Last Emperor is a good one too for Fedor.
Oh, yeah.
Krokop, like, no one calls him Mirko Flipovich.
Oh yeah, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of some ones where you kind of remember, like King Mo.
Rampage.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. This is Iceman.
Gilbert Melendez. Was Gilbert Melendez El Nino?
El Nino, yeah.
That one rules.
And you know what that means? That's Spanish for the Nino.
It is. It's too many hurricanes. If your first name is Shane, your nickname is apparently Hurricane.
Oh, there's a list of names that we have to. They're done. Like Pitbulls.
There should be no more Pitbulls, but like Patricio Pitbulls and Patricky Pitbull are great, because you call them the Pitbull
brothers.
Yeah, that
works for them. Yeah.
Great. No more Assassins, unless you can like the Assassin Baby, or like if Caitlin Chukagian was like the Blonde Assassin, that would be kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
You know, set yourself apart from your fellow Assassins.
I'm blonde and I'm a fighter.
I like Eddie Alvarez's too, by the way.
Underground King, yeah.
That's good.
Oh, yeah, huh? That's a good one.
Yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With Tatiana Suarez once again getting hurt and having to pull from a fight, should Roxanne want to still be on the card and take a fight? Also, if Roxanne wants to remain on the card, does Roxanne versus Maverick make sense? Since the judges robbed her against Barber, a step out in the competition. Well, I like Roxanne versus Miranda Maverick. I mean, I don't hate that fight at all. But if it is entirely this whole should she want, should she, will she thing, that is entirely up to Roxy. Like, if she doesn't want, like, speaking of good nicknames, the Happy Warrior is a great nickname for Roxanne Modafari. I have no, it is entirely up to Roxanne as a fighter, as a fight fan. I hope she stays on the card because I enjoy watching her fight and I like Roxanne Modafari fight weeks. But Mike, if so, taking that, should she stay on the card, take that part out because it's not up to us. Do you like the Roxanne Miranda Maverick fight?
Sure. I mean, from what I've been told, the plan is to keep her on the card. She wants to stay on the card. She doesn't care who the opponent is, and they're trying to work that out right now. So expect her to fight on that card. Yeah, I like the Miranda Maverick idea. If they want to do the Macy Barber rematch, I'm cool with that, too.
Won't happen.
Probably not.
Roxanne Modafari was on this very program saying, and Pete Carroll at the time was like, maybe we get the rematch between Macy and Roxanne in the future. And Roxanne was like, no, don't need to. So unless for the title, I don't think that fight will ever happen again.
Nah, touche.
I like
now. To be fair, I would like that rematch. I'm just taking it from Roxanne's point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I think Miranda Maverick makes a lot of sense. You could do that one.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I know what other fights really stick out.
I think Roxy understands at this point of her career that's what the promotion is going to use her as to. She's kind of, you know, she's that gatekeeper, you know, like you got to beat Roxy to be considered a contender. And I think Tatiana Suarez, that's, you know, it was obviously a big layup. Tatiana Suarez, we'll talk about her injury later. But
we're going to wait till our colleague Alex Savas is on the show to talk about Tatiana. She, that's like her, that's her girl.
Yeah.
What about Sajara Eubanks?
Ooh, they already fought in Madison Square Garden. But Sajara did this way.
Do that rematch, or you could do Montana De La Rosa.
Maverick
coming off a big win.
Yeah, Maverick is the one that makes the most sense because it's the easiest storyline. It's the easiest storyline because, you know, people, you know, 99.99% people think that Maverick won that fight. So it's a good kind of, it's the UFC almost kind of rewarding her victory, you know, giving her the victory.
What about Blonde Fighter? Does she have a fight coming up? She wants to fight every week. The Blonde Assassin?
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
No, nothing on the books. So yeah.
She wants to fight like every week.
I don't think
like Count Chikagian.
I just think the UFC wants to book her every week.
No. Julian Robertson suspended, right? Unfortunately, or is that over?
I'm not really sure.
Okay. Because Roxanne Modafari, Julian Robertson, and Callum Chikagian are tied for the most fights in UFC flyweight history.
Yeah, she was brought at the last Nevada commission meeting. It was literally like minutes after they said, hey, we're not going to test for marijuana anymore, or you can't get in trouble for it anymore. And then literally 3 minutes later, they suspended Julian Robertson for a past test. So, but they didn't give a time frame. So we don't know how long that suspension is. I'm sure it's not going to be like an insane amount of time. So if she's available in September, yeah, that works too.
I hope Roxy's on the card, and Maverick seems to be a fight that makes a lot of sense.
Neato. The Steve, another question.
We already did that one. Sorry, that's another Steve one. Here we go.
With Usman Covington 2 happening at MSG, does the UFC most likely put Masvidal versus Nate 2 as the co-main? Or first of all, Nate, Jorge and Nate are never going to be co-main. So Kamaru or Colby Covington as the co-main, or go with someone like Brandon Moreno in the co-main event with the largest Mexican population in NYC. I would hazard a guess that they'll do Islam and Dan Hooker in the co-main event and put Brad Riddell, Gregor Gillespie on that card too.
If they can get Hooker over with COVID restrictions, yeah.
I think, well, because Brad Riddell is in the same camp. I know they want to fight, like Dan Hooker wants to fight on the same car as a teammate. Greg Gillespie is from New York, so I'm sure he's going to want to fight at MSG. And Islam, of course, like they have the big Russian population in New York. They want to make him a star. So if he's looking for a fight, RDA or Hooker, Islam would be a good fight. But Islam, RDA seems to be the fight that's happening, so... Whatever, any of those. But there's zero chance Jorge and Nate take second seeding to Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington.
Yeah.
I think we will see...
Nice try.
No, we won't see that. I think we will see a second title fight. I think we'll see Rose Namajunas defend her title against somebody on that card. Whether they do the rematch of Zhang or they do the Esparza fight. I think that's the direction they'll go.
Love it.
All right, now we're going to go to the comments. So let's try to fly through these. I'll try my best.
I saw somebody tweeted me asking me if I get comic books on Wednesday. The answer is no. I don't really read anything current right now. Nothing really is captivating me.
All right, here we go.
Let me answer that because I knew Casey was going to pull it up. Boston. Do you think Bellator should add a female atomweight division? Yup.
Yep.
I don't care who adds it. I don't care if it's the UFC or Bellator. I think a top MMA promotion should add the 105 division. Which one it is irrelevant to me. I just want one of them to add it.
They better move fast.
I think the UFC and Bellator should add a female atomweight division.
I agree. I just don't know how big the fighter pool is. So if I don't want them to like water down one of them by taking from the other. So if you can just get all the atomweights in one promotion, the top atomweights, I'm fine with that.
If there's money, they will.
That's fine. That is fine. I'm just saying, like strawweight, like all out of the gate, the UFC had the best strawweight division. Anyway, another question from Four Corner Sports, this time in the YouTube comments. Should Francis and Stipe just fight in December since there's no news of any main event for the December pay-per-view card? And should the UFC throw an ultimatum like you fight in December? If not, oh well. Well, it's not even August yet. So I can't imagine the UFC is going to be targeting a December main event right now. Would the UFC throw an ultimatum? They could. They've done it a million times with a million different other fighters. So, like, too early for a December main event. And, the December paper, like, we've already heard. Doesn't Poirier and Charles want to fight on that card? Didn't they both say December 2021? Both of them.
That's
so, like,
it's
there
possible.
You go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think Francis could very well end up on that card against the winner of Gon and Lewis. So,
sure.
Yeah,
I think the heavyweight title is the only one that would put over Charles and Dustin because it's like the heavyweight title, and I think both of them would agree with that.
It's more money in their pockets.
Way more money in their pockets.
Yeah,
for sure.
And Dustin gets that. Dustin, he's like,
100%.
So,
Charles is a very competitive individual, and so he's gonna fight whoever, whenever.
Cool.
Thoughts on potential of Usman Nurmagomedov from Takiro Man 91 on YouTube. So when I was on Fight Island, I was speaking with a lot of the Russian media and a lot of the other Russians that were there because, of course, there was a lot of Dagestani fighters in that scene there fighting on that card. Because there was also, not Brave. What's the other Middle Eastern fights
UA, that happened. The Warriors
card that happened like that week too, so a lot of them were there. From what I've heard, Islam has a brighter future than Habib in terms of fighting skills. Like he is more like in the gym, people can see he has more he might have more talent at Habib's age. But from everything I've heard, Usman Nurmagomedov has like the brightest future of anyone in that camp. Like his striking is like already top level, and if you just add the grappling of Habib and Islam, it like good luck stopping that guy. But Habib and his like, because Habib talked about it while we were on Fight Island, I think I saw a scrum with him before, he is all in favor of the slow burn for Usman. Usman Nurmagomedov. Yep. He does not want him thrown to the wolves now. He wants a slow buildup for him because he goes, like someone asked him, what if he fights Jan, Russia versus Russia? He's like, we're not talking about it. He has like so many fights before he can get to the title. But from everything I heard, Usman Nurmagomedov has the brightest future.
Yep, I spoke with him yesterday, as a matter of fact.
We'll have an interview about him fighting.
Yeah. And he agrees with that sentiment. I asked him, like, if you go out there and beat Manny Muro, do you think you'll be top 10 in the rankings? And he said, probably not, and that's fine. I'm eventually going to smash all these guys anyway. So I love the matchmaking. I think they're doing a great job matching him up with a guy like Mike Hamill, who is so tough to put away. And then putting him in there with a guy like Manny Muro, who also is very durable and seems to be in a great mindset right now. He's overcome a lot. I think this is going to get him just valuable cage experience. Like, he's used to finishing. Usman's used to finishing fights so quickly. The Mike Hamill fight, he got a lot of experience from. I think he'll get a lot of equal experience against a guy like Manny Muro, who's really tough to put away, especially in this mind frame. So I love the matchmaking. It's perfect. And I expect a 15-minute or so showcase out of Usman Nurmagomedov on Saturday. Manny's tough, man. I like Manny a lot, but Usman is – I mean, we know why this fight is on the card. We know why it's on the main card. This is going to be a chance for Usman to show all of his skills for 15 minutes.
All right. This question could take a while to answer, but just try to get through it quick.
The UFC does another trade with one for Stipe. Who do you see the UFC taking?
Damn.
From one?
Marais.
You have to get a couple of. I wouldn't say Marais, because Marais, like, he barely does any media in the UFC. That's what the UFC is all about.
And Stipe does.
That's why the UFC wants to get rid of him.
Yeah. I don't know. There's no one like Ben Askren over at one right now. That's like can immediately be inserted in and sell a fight.
Like maybe the Lee siblings. But
maybe.
But they're not big fight sellers either. Like their skills pay the bills. They're not big like trash talkers.
But I think the way they fight and just the looks of them, I think it would work. I'm just saying. I'm just trying to put some names out there. But one would have to give up a lot.
But they would also.
But maybe maybe UFC is trying to get rid of Stipe. I don't know. It'd be weird. It's just I have no idea, to be honest.
Who's that? I can't believe I'm not thinking of it. Who's that? Like, who's that huge dude that only has like three fights?
Rug
came over. Rug. Yeah.
He lost. He got punched in the throat or something. It was a weird fight. Yeah.
Well, bring him in. He's an attraction. You know, slowly. Just rug.
Let's do like a three promotion trade, like they do in other professional sports. You know, like.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like we're running out of time, and like, I was like, "Oh, this question is gonna take forever to answer." And once we start getting our minds going,
that's a whole show right there.
Yeah, it's a whole show.
The UFC can get we'll do like this big like roundabout thing. The UFC, well, like Stipe can go to one, and then Kyoji Horiguchi can come to the UFC, and then someone goes to Ryzen. From Bellator or someone else. I don't know.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Lobov's retirement. So it's not official yet. I don't know if you guys saw this, but after Artem lost his bare knuckle fight, his bare knuckle fight last Friday, he announced he would most likely retire, but he hasn't really said anything since. And that was like immediately after the fight. And you know, your mind kind of goes somewhere else after the fight. So if he does retire, under 500 record in like two different sports and people still talk about him. Good on you, man. You Artem Lobov is a great prize fighter.
100%.
Awesome prize fighter.
Does anyone think Lauren Murphy can beat Valentina Shevchenko in the upcoming fight? She could, but I obviously favor Valentina.
It doesn't matter because she is the rightful number one contender. So it doesn't matter. She's getting in there and she's going to try to do her best. It doesn't freaking matter. She earned that spot. That's all.
I think her durability and the ability in Lauren's ability to finish fights, I don't mean like finish like stop fights. I mean just her ability to go the distance no matter what happens makes her
very dangerous.
Makes her interesting in this fight. I think makes her interesting.
Durability and your chin health is a extremely useful tool in a fist fight.
Yeah, and I know it was just one round. I know Valentina didn't take any damage, but if Jennifer Maya can hold Valentina down for 5 minutes, you know, then Laura Murphy can. And she only has to do it for 15 minutes and just survive 10 other minutes. So that's all I'm saying.
Lauren Murphy also has the ability to make her take her opponents completely out of her game, which is also a skill. Don't know if Valentina is one of those fighters that will fall into that trap. I highly doubt it. But durability is going to be the game changer for Lauren Murphy.
Yep. Hey, and no one's walked through Lauren Murphy in her whole career. No one's just walked through it. So I like the fight. I don't know why fans hate it. I like it. It makes sense to me.
It's the only fight they to just make.
Wanted, yeah. I think they just wanted the Amanda fight. I think that's literally just it. I don't think it's anything against Lauren.
Yeah.
I hope they gave Cupcake and Cookie Monster some nickname love. Misha Tate got the Cupcake nickname after one of her Strikeforce fights, right? Because she was eating a cupcake and they caught it on camera.
No, she had it before. That's why she was eating the cupcake.
Is that it?
Yeah.
And then Cookie Monster, Carla Esparza, awesome. Love it.
It works for her.
That's a good one.
Love me some dessert-centric nicknames. How likely is it that Pitbull McKee will become a trilogy? Oh, man, the first fight has to happen first, man.
Yeah. I mean, that is not a Jose question.
You know what? I won't say trilogy, but they will fight two times. I would say they will at least fight two times at some point. And I think if Bellator has – everything goes right for Bellator, McKee wins this Saturday, and then they rematch at 55 for the lightweight belt. That's – I think is McKee, the perfect – that's the perfect scenario, I think, for Coker.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
McKee winning on Saturday makes it much more likely. I'll say that.
Yeah.
There's no – there should be a question mark. Go on.
Pitbull versus McKee. Could he fight? Like, say McKee loses, goes up, fights Patricio Pitbull, wins, and then Patricio goes, I have to. So that's three Pitbull fights in a row. Just two of them happen to be against Patricio. One of them could be against Patricio. You didn't specify.
Well, yeah,
it's a dangerous fight.
That's not. Yeah. If McKee loses and goes, winds up going up. Yeah.
And then smashes his brother. You know, Patricio's going to want revenge at 155.
And that sells. That makes sense. That would be a fight. That makes sense.
Prize fighting.
Yeah. This next comment doesn't. It needs to have a question mark on the end because they say it's a statement, but I think it's more of a question.
Leon Edwards is getting screwed by the UFC.
See?
Mom.
I don't know.
I know, Mike. You're pro. You're pro. You like the Colby fight, right? I saw.
Yeah, I prefer the Colby fight over the Leon fight. And it's listen. I get it. I get why people are up in arms about Leon not getting a title shot. But he has admitted himself that this is partially his fault. It was, you know, he could have fought sooner. And it would have been tough. It would have been tough for him to fight Kamaru Usman on short notice on Fight Island instead of Masvidal. He had to say no. He turned down other fights along the way. So he would admit that part of this problem is on him. And then the Nate Diaz opportunity comes along. And you have a chance. They put you in a position to shine, to showcase yourself, to earn that shot. You just went out there. I mean, it was a fine performance. Like, he won the fight, gets the second paycheck or whatever, but no one left that fight thinking, you know what? Got to give Leon Edwards the next title shot. He beat he earned it over Colby. No, it just didn't happen that way. So part of it's on him. Like, you can make the argument that he's partially getting screwed by the UFC, but I'm sorry, man. Like, the Bilal thing happened. Bad luck. It sucked. The Nate thing happened. You almost got stopped at the end of that fight. I'm sorry. You gotta win one more. Fight Gilbert Burns. There you go. Then you get Leon it. There's no doubt after that.
If Leon had been in Khamzat, he would have got the title fight, though.
Oh,
for
hell
sure,
yeah.
I think.
And Khamzat would have got it if he beat Leon. It's insane.
You know what? If Leon beats Gilbert Burns, but he doesn't beat him the way he should beat him, like the way it makes Dana happy, he'll still be in the same position until Leon Edwards.
I don't agree with that.
You think there's Leon's at a point where if he just keeps winning, they have to give him a title shot?
He's at the point where if he beats Gilbert, there's nothing else left for him. Like beating a no contest with Bilal and then beating Nate Diaz is not that's not enough. That's not enough for anybody.
But that's a but that's a giant win streak he is on. That's what it's
right.
The win
streak. But the names aren't that. Some of the names aren't just the strength of schedule is not that great.
Jorge,
it just isn't
because it's about ticket sales. Jorge Masvidal beat Nate Diaz, gets a title shot. You know, so I mean,
Leon should reward Gilbert Burns. Because what if Stephen Thompson had beat Gilbert Burns, Leon's even further back in the line now. So, I mean, Gilbert actually did Leon a favor. Like, go in there and fight Gilbert. There you go. He knocked a contender out of your path. And Gilbert will be just fine being that guy just thwarting off potential challenges for Usman until he gets his opportunity. He's fine. He's in no rush to get back to a title shot, Gilbert told me. He's happy playing the Chukagian role, just knocking off contenders. So, you beat Gilbert Burns, I think that's enough. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's it. Now, if I'm Gilbert, I mean, you better hope Colby doesn't win because you know they're going to run that back a third time. But still, puts Leon in the better case scenario to get a title shot if he beats Gilbert. And do it this year, man. Get in there, get another fight, get another win. You can't be denied anymore.
I think he's getting screwed. I just think the UFC loves Colby because he moves the needle. They reward him for being inactive. They punish other fighters for being inactive. That's all. I just don't need – to me, it's just money. Leon Edwards doesn't make the UFC enough money, and that's it. Until he makes him enough money.
I'm fine with – I would have been fine with either. I like both of them as high-level martial arts fights. I much prefer the Leon Edwards – like, because part of me, I do think wins and losses matter in a sport. So if you win – a bunch of fights in a row, you should just be awarded based on merit. But again, this is a prize fight. They are prize fighters. Who makes the most money? Probably going to be Colby Covington. I also much prefer any other fight promotion, like promoting. I despise how Colby Covington promotes fights. I hate it, but I get why the UFC wants to push it. So if you're telling me as like a human being, much rather prefer the Leon Edwards build over the Colby Covington build. But I think Colby Covington could be the second best welterweight in the world.
What's the biggest problem that fans see in the UFC? A lot of times, they don't have enough stars. Well, they're trying to build Usman as a star right now. That's most as the first fight was phenomenal, and Colby very well could be the second best welterweight in the world. Hell, he could be the best welterweight in the world. We don't know. We'll find out in November. But this is a fight solely made. I think the prime thing is to boost Usman's stock. Usman goes out there and beats Colby again, especially coming after that knockout, those back-to-back knockout wins earlier this year, especially the Masvidal knockout. Usman, in terms of being a star, is getting there too. Like, when Jed Meshew said he's the breakout fighter of the year, he's not wrong. Like, he's definitely in that conversation in terms of how people view him. And, you know, people don't view him as the boring wrestler anymore. He's the guy who's knocking the shit out of people. So, I mean, I think if he goes out there and knocks the shit out of Colby, he might even get a seat at that table right now. So this is a potential star building fight for Kamaru, and you can't put Kamaru versus Leon at MSG. You just can't. It's just not the kind of fight that sells out the Garden. It just isn't.
Let's also not forget that fight is not technically official. That report came out, but like the UFC hasn't announced it yet. So part of me, when they announced it, I'm like, oh, I don't. Because remember, Kamaru was tweeting like, been there, done that. Next, about Colby Covington. Part of me wonders that Dana White just made the announcement to put pressure on Kamaru to take the fight. I don't know if that's the case, but that was my first thought. It's like when they announced Demetrius Johnson versus Cody Garbrandt in Seattle. Didn't happen because Demetrius Johnson says, no, I didn't say yes to that, and pushed back.
Yeah. No, we confirm. I mean, I will say we confirmed. Yeah, we confirmed that the location is the only thing that's up in the air right now. Mm-hmm. I'll say that. But it's looking very likely on the street.
Mike Hack went to one BKFC event. He's already swearing like a Diaz brother. Hey, you know.
Hey, listen, once in a while it comes out. First appearance on the show, I think I dropped a couple.
You know, this is what Florida, it's what happens when you go to Florida. You come back a different man or woman anyway.
look at Tom Brady. He's not the same guy that was playing for the Patriots all those years.
It's almost like he's not playing for Bill Belichick anymore, right?
That's right.
Anyway, you guys have been great. I'm specifically talking about the fans that tuned into this show. Thank you so much for watching. It's been a little longer. We almost went 90 whole minutes. But Mike, between the links tomorrow?
Oh, yes. Triple threat match, baby. Triple threat match.
Now, tomorrow is also the Bellator 263 press conference, which Casey will be at. Is this going to be a live between the links, or will it be a podcast format only?
It will be live. I'll be here.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we go.
All right.
Breaking news. Breaking news. We have to start a little later. We'll start a little later.
Can you give us a hint on who's going to be on?
Yeah. AK, Jed, and Spencer Kite. Triple threat match.
So you're going to just stack the Canadians against? You're going to get a Western Canadian, an Eastern Canadian, they're going to go after a Southern man?
That's right. Wow. And and I will say, not all three individuals will go to the knockout round. Someone's going home early.
My goodness. My goodness. We could have an all-Canadian affair. Anyway, you guys catch that. Casey, you'll be at the 263 pre-fight press conference. Is it just the main event, or are they including the co-main too?
The main and co-main.
Okay, Matt cool.
Burrell and I forget his opponent. I forget.
Yeah. He's not. Primus isn't going to be there? Isn't Primus fighting on?
No, he's at the media day he's today. I chose to be here with you,
Peter. Oh, Emmanuel Sanchez. That's right.
Yeah, that's
good
the
fight. Fun fight, fun fight. Anyway,
I'm talking to Brent Primus in like 15 minutes, so you will get some Brent Primus stuff.
He's sassy.
He is a sassy individual. You can ask him all about calf kicks because, you know, he did that to Michael Chandler. But anyway, we'll see you back next Wednesday. I've been Jose. That's been Mike. That's been Casey. Stick around for a dual preview show on Friday. Dual post show on Saturday?
I guess. I
maybe.
Know.
Why not?
Why not?
We'll see you there. Peace, guys.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.